Thank you very much, Paul. Well, good morning, everyone. My name is Matt. I am the associate pastor at the church. It's nice to be here with you. I'm going to start by just telling us a little bit about where we're up to in the book of Exodus. The book of Exodus, second book in the Bible. We've worked through some of that last year. We're continuing on through Exodus this year. And Exodus is a really important book, actually. Some people even think that Exodus is the most important piece of writing that's ever been written. I think that's probably true, actually, because for one thing, it's a key fundamental story in three of the world's major religions. It is the beginning of the story of Israel and the Israelites. Not really much to do with the Israelites that we hear about, the Israel we hear about today on the news, the sad situation over in the Middle East at the moment. But the young nation of Israel, as Israel was just starting off. But Exodus is also a book that tells us a whole lot about laws and morals, and the laws and kind of moral code that comes out of the book of Exodus still shapes the way we think about laws and human rights and things like that, even today, 3,000 years later. And as well as that, the book of Exodus, this story of the people of Israel being set free from slavery, has shaped massively how our world thinks about freedom. Freedom. Our freedom is something that we care about a lot in our world today, I think. But we don't want others telling us what to do. We want to be able to choose the kind of life we want to live. And more than ever before, we want to be free to decide for ourselves who we're going to be. And much of that thinking comes right back from the book of Exodus, a book that has inspired revolutions and inspired thinking about equality and liberty and things like that. But there's a funny thing when it comes to the topic of freedom, because freedom on its own is not quite as great as we might think it is. It's not quite as easy and simple as we might think it is. Many of you might know that, as well as working here at the church, I spend a couple of days a week working with uni students at UniSA, with the Christian student group there. And every year we see this at uni. We have students come in, they've finished school the year before, and they're really excited that after 13 long years of being at school, they're finally free from that daily grind of being at school. And they come to uni and they're amazed because and I can remember this when I first came to uni. You have a lot of freedom when you're studying at university. There are no teachers looking over your shoulders. You can do whatever you like, really. You don't have to go to class. No one's going to really pay any attention whether you do it or don't. There are lectures online and you don't even have to watch them if you don't want to. You're so free to use your time how you would like to. And so a lot of students, they come to uni and they're just blown away. Their time's their own. And I remember this when I was at uni. I would see friends. I would sleep in, I'd go out late at night, I'd go out for coffees. Actually, probably the reason I got addicted to coffee was having so much coffee at uni. It's freedom, freedom, freedom. Only then, you get to this time of year, early June, it's the end of a semester, suddenly you start to realize there's a whole lot of assignments due that you haven't actually been working on. Suddenly you realize you've got some very serious exams coming up that you are not ready for. And suddenly you start really finding it really hard. This study you're doing was meant to be what was going to set you on the path to be the sort of person you wanted to be. And what if you can't do it? What if you fail? What if you can't make it through? And very quickly you start to realize that freedom was pretty good. Oh, but actually, I think school was pretty nice too, wasn't it? When everything was just a bit simpler. You see, freedom is just having no responsibilities, just being able to do whatever you want, whenever you want. Well, that can be nice for a little while, but pretty quickly you can also start to feel a bit overwhelmed, a bit aimless or a bit hollow. If I'm just doing whatever I want, what is that? Who does that mean I am? What's my purpose? What am I all about here? And that could be all sorts of, I think, different times in life other than university when we might feel those things as well, when we perhaps leave behind a significant job or get to retirement age or even move houses or move out of home or finish a project or send the kids off to school after years of having them at home. I'm free now. Huh? Done with some of those responsibilities. But now that I'm free, I might find that I'm left feeling kind of empty or a bit hollow or even overwhelmed with what to do next. Or perhaps I don't really feel especially free. Well, in the book of Exodus, I think this is a little bit like the sort of situation where we join the people of Israel today. They've been set free from slavery in Egypt. Nice. God's rescued them. They've had the wonders of the plagues, the wonders of the Passover. They've been brought across the Red Sea. But they have come across the Red Sea. And what have they found on the other side of the Red Sea? Not very much, really. Just wilderness, hardship, And very quickly, they've gone from celebrating and enjoying this new freedom to suddenly thinking, oh, this isn't as easy as we thought it would be. Why are we even here? What are we doing? Before long, they're even tempted to go back to slavery, where things weren't easy, but at least they were simple. But today in the story of Exodus, we come to a very significant moment, a very significant story. I think this is really the turn of the story of the book of Exodus. Today, Israel arrives at the place where they've been heading towards. They arrive at the mountain of God, Mount Sinai. And they're going to stay at this mountain for a long time. At this mountain, they're going to hear the Ten Commandments. We're going to start looking at the Ten Commandments today and then look more at the Ten Commandments next week. At this mountain, they're going to hear the law. They're going to worship God. They're going to make a covenant with God. They're going to build something called the tabernacle. And as Israel comes to this mountain, we are going to see that these people haven't just been set free from slavery in Egypt just for the sake of it. They have been set free from Egypt, not just to go wandering around the wilderness. They haven't just been set free from something. They've been set free for something. They've come to the mountain, and we're going to see that they've been set free so that they can be the people of God. Now, this mountain, by the way, has always been where they've been heading ever since Exodus chapter 3. That's where God appeared to Moses at the burning bush and said, this will be a sign for you. When you come out of Egypt, you're going to worship me on this mountain. Well, you might remember even when Moses was speaking to Pharaoh, he said that famous line, let my people go. But he didn't actually say, if you go and read it again, he didn't actually say, let my people go, we'll stop. He always said, let my people go. So, let my people go so that we can go and worship God in the wilderness. And today, we see that they do finally arrive at this mountain where they're going to meet God and worship God. And we pick this up in Exodus chapter 19, which I'm going to read for us now. It's on the screen as well. Thanks, Yashi, for keeping up with me on the screen. Let's see what happens when the Israelites arrive at this mountain after such a long journey. On the first day of the third month after the Israelites left Egypt, on that very first day, they came to the desert of Sinai. After they set out from Rephidim, they entered the desert of Sinai, and Israel camped there in the desert in front of the mountain. And then Moses went up to God, and the Lord called to him from the mountain and said, this is what you are to say to the descendants of Jacob, and what you are to tell the people of Israel. You yourselves have seen what I did to Egypt, and how I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now, if you obey me fully and keep my covenant, then out of all nations, you will be my treasured possession. Although the whole earth is mine, you will be for me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words you are to speak to the Israelites. So Moses went back and summoned the elders of the people and set before them all the words the Lord had commanded him to speak. And the people all responded together, we will do everything the Lord has said. So Moses brought their answer back to the Lord. And the Lord said to Moses, I am going to come to you in a dense cloud, so that the people will hear me speaking with you and will always put their trust in you. And then Moses told the Lord what the people had said. And the Lord said to Moses, go to the people and consecrate them today and tomorrow. Have them wash their clothes and be ready for the third day, because on that day the Lord will come down on Mount Sinai in the sight of all the people. Put limits for the people around the mountain and tell them, be careful that you do not approach the mountain or touch the foot of it. Whoever touches the mountain is to be put to death. They are to be stoned or shot with arrows. Not a hand is to be laid on them. No person or animal shall be permitted to live. Only when the ram's horn sounds a long blast may they approach the mountain. After Moses had gone down the mountain to the people, he consecrated them and they washed their clothes. And he said to the people, prepare yourselves for the third day. Abstain from sexual relations. On the morning of the third day, there was thunder and lightning, and with a thick cloud over the mountain and a very loud trumpet blast, everyone in the camp trembled. And then Moses led the people out of the camp to meet with God. And they stood at the foot of the mountain. Mount Sinai was covered with smoke because the Lord descended on it in fire. The smoke billowed up from it like smoke from a furnace, and the whole mountain trembled violently. As the sound of the trumpet grew louder and louder, Moses spoke and the voice of God answered him. The Lord descended to the top of Mount Sinai and called Moses to the top of the mountain. So Moses went down, and the Lord said to him, go down and warn the people so that they do not force their way through to see the Lord, and many of them perish. Even the priests who approach the Lord must consecrate themselves, or the Lord will break out against them. Moses said to the Lord, the people cannot come up Mount Sinai because you yourself warned us. Put limits around the mountain and set it apart as holy. And the Lord replied, go down and bring Aaron up with you. But the priests and the people must not force their way through to come up to the Lord, or he will break out against them. So Moses went down to the people and told them. This picture in Exodus, this picture of freedom, has always been about more than just getting out of slavery. It's always been about more than just leaving the bad things, leaving Egypt behind. It's always been for this purpose. You see, Exodus has given us a bigger and better picture of freedom. The picture in Exodus is a picture of being set free from slavery, set free from oppression, but it's also a picture of being set free for something. It's a picture of being set free for God. It's a picture of being set free to be who they were always meant to be, to live for the one they were always meant to live for. It's a picture of being set free not to flounder, but to thrive as God's people. And I want to show you today that this wonderful picture of freedom is the same sort of freedom that's on offer still for us today as God's people. For us to belong today, to God today, is to be free. And it means more than just being free from something. We've also been freed for something. And for someone. These 3 points then for us today. I'm going to try and take us through this logic, show us what it means for God, show us what it means for God's people in Exodus, and show us also what it means for us to belong to God today. 3 points. Number one, how God's people are set free. Number two, who God's people are set free for. And number three, the one God's people are set free for. So who God's people are set free to be, the one God's people are set free for. So first, how are God's people set free? Let's have a look again at this crucial part of the passage. We had it in the kids' talk with Territory Dan, but there's something really crucial here to get right. Let's just notice again the significance of what's going on. We'll go to verses 3 and verses, particularly verses 4 to 6. You can see this here. Remember what we've seen this already with Territory Dan. You yourselves have seen what I did to Egypt and how I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. They're amazing words, aren't they? As God tells Moses, the words that God tells Moses to speak to the people. You've seen what I've done. I've carried you. I've brought you to myself. This is what we've seen in the book of Exodus. God has shown them his power. He has judged the Egyptians. He has rescued the Israelites. He's brought them out from Egypt. He's brought them across the Red Sea. He's provided for them with manna and quail, as we saw last week. It's like, as we saw in the kids' talk, it's like, as God says, I carried you on eagle's wings. We had the picture in the kids' talk of the eagle snatching up the child. That's one picture. I actually looked it up, and apparently eagles carry their babies on their wings to teach them to fly. I wonder if that's really maybe kind of what the picture is meant to make us think of, that tender image of the mother eagle carrying its young. Perhaps that's what we're meant to think of when we think of God carrying his people out of Egypt. It also makes me think of that final scene in The Lord of the Rings when the hobbits have just kind of won the day and then they get carried away by the eagles for safety. Of course, that also always makes you think, well, why didn't they just get the eagles to fly them in the first place and make the whole movie a bit shorter? But what I want us to notice particularly as we look at this, we look at the greatness of what God's done here, is the order of things. Let's just notice the order of things. There are plenty of things in life where order doesn't matter very much, like when you're making a cake, a lot of times the recipe just says, chuck everything in together, mix it all up. Doesn't really matter which order everything goes in. But there are other times when order does really matter. Say if you have to mix up the cake batter before you put it in the oven. Otherwise, that's not going to work very well, right? With God's rescue, the order really matters. And the order here, what's the order here? Well, what comes first? It starts with God saving his people. God has rescued them from slavery. And so far, God's people haven't contributed a thing. The people haven't had to live up to a certain standard or prove themselves. It's all been about God, his choice to rescue, his love. It's all been about him and his grace. And then now there is going to be an important transition. You can see it in the middle there, the word now, an important word. Now, God says, I've saved you, I've carried you on eagle's wings now. Now there are going to be some expectations. Now God's people do have a role to play. But let's make sure we get the order right, because it's not, you know, okay, you have to do all these things and then you will be saved. It's you've already been saved. I've carried you on eagle's wings. I've saved you by grace. And the expectations, the need for obedience comes second. It flows out from that. You might sometimes hear, you might have heard this before, people will say that in the Old Testament, God was a hard taskmaster, right? You might hear that he gave his people all sorts of requirements to follow, and they had to follow all those requirements, and that was the only way that they could achieve salvation. It was all about works. You have to work hard to follow all the rules. That's how you're going to be saved. When people will say it's only in the New Testament, you then get a new kind of God, a gracious God, a generous God, who saves his people because of his grace, not because of works. Perhaps sometimes that's even how we kind of talk about things or how we think. But it's not quite right, is it? You can see it in this picture. God has saved his people. He's carried them on eagle's wings. He's freed them from slavery, and it's by grace. They didn't deserve it. They haven't earned it. It's all been about him and his love and his goodness. And what we can see, actually, is there is a great continuity between the picture of the Israelites in the Old Testament and how things work for God's people today. As in Exodus, God's people were set free from slavery because of God's grace and because God was a great God of rescue. Well, so today, Christians are set free from slavery to sin and the consequences of sin. And we're also set free by God's grace shown to us in Jesus and the good news of Jesus' death and resurrection. I might actually just show you just very quickly, 1,000 or so years after Exodus, the Apostle Paul in the New Testament, he used almost the same language as the book of Exodus to talk about our salvation in Jesus. He said this in Galatians chapter 5. It's for freedom that Christ has set us free. Stand firm then, and do not let yourselves be burdened again by the yoke of slavery. Paul reminds Christians that in Jesus, in the gospel, we've been set free, and he's using that Exodus kind of language, isn't it? Don't let yourself be tempted to go back to slavery. You've been set free for freedom. And then only a few verses later, as in Exodus, we need to get the order right. Now that you're free, there are expectations. Well, still true in the New Testament too. You, my brothers and sisters, were called to be free, but do not use your freedom to indulge the flesh. Rather, serve one another humbly in love. Now, the good news of Jesus, of Christianity, is that through Jesus we've been set free, free from sin. We're freed from the consequences of sin. We've been set free not because of what we've done, but because of his grace. It's not our doing any more than the Israelites saved themselves out of Egypt. But now, if that's how God's people are set free, we're saying that that real freedom, this full picture of freedom in Exodus, is more than what we've been set free from. It's also what we were set free for. Who were we set free to be? Who were God's people set free to be? In Exodus 19, this is what God then says to his people next. He's reminded them of what he's done for them. But now he says this, if you obey me fully and keep my covenant, then out of all nations you will be my treasured possession. Although the whole earth is mine, you will be for me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. This is why God has saved his people. This is who they have been set free to be. They have been set free so that they can follow him. And as they follow him, this is who they'll be. They'll be a treasured possession. They'll be a kingdom of priests. They'll be a holy nation. Now, last week, if you were here, we had some props. We had some breakfast cereal. I thought I'd bring in another prop today because people seem to like that. This one's a little bit different. I've got here today my two daughters' rock collections. This is Eleanor's. This is Lucy's. All sorts of precious rocks in here. A couple of nice ones that they've found. There you go. Beautiful, beautiful little rocks they've collected over the years. Have you spent much time around little kids? I'm sure you'll know that little kids can get pretty attached to anything. When we go walking, go exploring at the beach or at the park, Lucy and Eleanor will always come back with what they would call their treasures. Normally we have a rule that it's only one treasure you're allowed to collect each outing. Shells, bits of sea glass, cuttlefish, you name it. And kids, when they get these little treasures like this, they hold onto them tight, don't they? They always have to carry it in the car on the way home. Normally, when they get home and they go to bed, they want to have it in their bed when they go to sleep. They treasure little things like this. They treasure these rocks. I'm slowly trying to filter these out and actually chuck a few in the bin, but don't tell them that. Some might not quite make it home today, but, to God, he has set his people free so that we, as we follow him, can be his treasured possession. And that means God's people are not some side hobby project. God's people, we're not set free because he's bored or because he just, out of vague thought that he might help us out. He frees his people, frees the people of Israel. He brought them to himself so that they would be his treasured possession. And he loves his people. He holds on to his people. He looks after his people. He treasures his people. And then his people are also set free to be, you see those words there, a kingdom of priests. A kingdom of priests. I wonder what comes to mind for you when you think of the word priest. You might think of a church leader. You might think of someone like Simon and myself. I'm not a priest. Simon technically is. But we might think of priests maybe something different though as well. You priests often come up in like fantasy books and old-timey sort of movies and things like that, medieval things. But in the context of the world of the Bible, a priest really is a go-between. That's what we might say a priest is. The priest is the one who could particularly act as a go-between between humans and spiritual things. Or in the case of Israel and their religious system, the priest was the one who would be the go-between between the people and God. They'd be the ones who could offer the sacrifices. They'd be the ones who could offer the prayers. The priest would facilitate the relationship between God and his people. So for the people of Israel to be called a kingdom of priests, the idea is that God is going to use his people to all be priests. They're going to be a nation of go-betweens between him and his world. His people have been set free to be his priests so that he can use them to then get to know the whole rest of the world. Because God cares about his world. And then thirdly, God's people are set free to be his treasured possession, a kingdom of priests, and he also there calls them a holy nation. Holy means to be dedicated 100%, fully committed, set aside for an exclusive purpose. God set his people free because he wants them to be his people, dedicated to him. He wants them to be a people who won't run after other gods. He's a jealous God, as he says just in a moment in the commandments. And this is not a negative thing, as if God has a big ego or anything like that. It's because this is what humans are made for. This is where we find the best kind of life. We're made to live for God. And so as we dedicate ourselves to him, we stand up for others. We set aside ourselves to be his people. And they're holy. And we find life as it was meant to be. God's people have been set free. They've been set free for a purpose. To be his people. To be his treasured possession. To be his kingdom of priests. And just as this was the case for the Israelites as they came out of Egypt and met God on that mountain. Again, it's the same for Christians today. Look at what the Apostle Peter said. Again, about 1,000 or so years after Exodus. Peter said this to a group of churches. But you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. For Christians, if we follow Jesus, we've been set free. And as with the Israelites, we've been set free for a purpose. We've still been set free to be his holy people, to be his special possession, to be his kingdom of priests, to tell others about him and declare his praises. And as we follow Jesus and live his way and live well as his people, this is what we're being. This is who we're being. This is our purpose, our identity, our freedom. And I think it's actually pretty exciting that we get to be his special people. I wonder, how are we going at living this way? How are we going at being his people here at Trinity Church Brighton? Do we know that we're treasured by God? Are we being his priests? Are we being the go-betweens where others can come and meet him as well? And are we living as his holy people? Are we setting ourselves apart for him, dedicating ourselves to him, and standing out from those around us? How God's people are set free? We're set free by his grace. Who God's people are set free to be? We're set free to be his people, his treasured possession, his kingdom of priests, his holy nation. Last point then, the one God's people are set free for. The rest of Exodus 19 is an amazing story. I think as we had it read out, you probably picked up some of that. God said to his people, I want you to follow me. The people say that they will. And so God prepares to come down to the mountain to meet them. He wants Israel to be his people. He wants to know them. He doesn't want them to be his people just in theory. He wants to have relationship with them. He wants to be theirs and he wants them to be his. God has set his free people free so that he can begin loving, intimate relationship with them. Which will be key to the whole second half of the book of Exodus as we hear about God wanting to live with his people. And so to begin this relationship, God has come down. He comes down in this thick cloud and Did you pick up all that back and forth as we read it out? They have to set boundaries so that the people can't come too close, and they have to wash their clothes, and they have to abstain from sex for a few days. Kind of weird cultural things that I think are kind of pointing us towards ceremonial purity, I think is kind of what's going on there. And there's thunder and lightning and danger. I was hoping with all the weather this week we might get some thunder and lightning so we could start getting this picture in our minds. Sadly not. And there's tension because God loves his people and he does want to be near them, but this is still the holy God. This is still a God who's 100% dedicated to justice and goodness, and that is a good thing. We wouldn't want a God who's not committed to good things, but if you're a flawed, imperfect person, to be near the holy God is a scary thing. But God loves his people. He wants to be with them, and so he does. He comes down to the mountain. It's covered in cloud. It's covered in fire. And God speaks to his people. And for the first time in Exodus chapter 20, just after what we've read, God speaks not just to Moses, but he speaks directly to them. Imagine you're in the valley next to the big mountain of Sinai. Imagine you've seen the cloud come down, you've seen the fire swallowing the mountain, and then God speaks loudly. Imagine the booming voice echoing around. God speaks out and he gives his 10 commandments. Let's read now what he's going to say in Exodus chapter 20. I'm going to be able to come back to these commandments and think about them more next week. But look at what he says from Exodus 20, his 10 commandments that he gives his people. And God spoke all these words, "I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an image in the form of anything in heaven above or on earth, but beneath in the waters below. You shall not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing the children for the sin of the parents to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing love to 1,000 generations of those who love me and keep my commandments. You shall not misuse the name of the Lord your God, for the Lord will not hold anyone guiltless who misuses his name. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you should not do any work, neither you nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male or female servants, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and earth, the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Honor your father and mother so that you may live long in the land the Lord your God has given you. You shall not murder, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not steal, you shall not give false testimony against your neighbor. You shall not covet your neighbor's house, you shall not covet your neighbor's wife, or his male or female servant, or his ox or donkey, or anything else that belongs to your neighbor. And when the people saw the thunder and lightning and heard the trumpet and saw the mountain in smoke, they trembled with fear and they stayed at a distance. Those 10 commandments are very famous, very well known, very fundamental. As God and his people come together, this is how God begins the relationship. This is his heart for his people. This is what he expects of them. This is very much the constitution of all the law that's going to follow, all what we're going to look at over the next few weeks, the core of what God expects. And we are, as I said, going to come back and look again at these 10 commandments next week in more detail. But today, I just want us to see one thing, and that's that these commandments, we might think, okay, well, here we go with the rules then. But I want to show you that these commandments are all about, actually, relationship. They're all about everything we've been talking about today. The commandments are about freedom. Israel's been set free from slavery, but not just to aimlessly wander the desert. They've been set free for God, to live with him and to live for him, to live for the one they were made for, and to live his way. And for today, let's just notice what these first commandments are about. They start with that reminder again of God's rescue. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt. And then commandment one, you shall have no other gods before me. You're going to live for God now. You're going to be my people, holy and dedicated to him. Commandment two, you won't make idols. Don't try and make other things God then. Don't shortchange yourselves and make for yourself a weak God. If God's going to be your God, then stick with him. Commandment three, don't misuse God's name. Don't be casual with God. He's the holy God. Commandment four, remember the Sabbath. don't try and be God. He rested on the seventh day, so you can rest too. We spoke about this last week if you were here. Remind yourself that you're not indispensable, that you can trust Him enough to rest. Can you see how, as we just look at those first few commandments, this is much less about good moral rules that we need to follow to prove ourselves. This is about living for our Creator, living for God, living with God, treating Him as God, loving Him as God, and enjoying His love for us. This is about relationship, much more than it is about rules. This is about living free, not just the freedom of not being slaves anymore, but the freedom of being who we're meant to be, living His way, in loving relationship with the one we were made for. Set free for God, set free to live with God, to love Him, and be loved by Him. This, according to Exodus, is true freedom. This is the good life. Life with the one who made us. Life as it was meant to be. Can I say, I think deep down, this is the kind of freedom we actually do really crave. Annika and I, earlier this year, went across to a concert in Sydney, Taylor Swift. Pretty amazing spectacle. There was lots of excitement and noise, and actually in some ways it was probably a little bit like being there in Exodus with the fire and the thunder and the sound and the booming. But the reason I bring it up is what stood out particularly for me was the emotion. At the concert, I was here and Annika was next to me and then Annika's sister and her friend. But on the other side of me were some teenage girls that I didn't know. And through this concert, I think pretty much for the entire length of the concert, and it's a 3.5 hour concert, the girl next to me was crying the whole time. And not sad tears, but tears of joy. Maybe she was crying because it was so bad, but no. She was crying tears of joy. Tears of being overwhelmed or something like that. Kind of annoying, actually, sitting next to someone like that. Mind you, she probably thought it was weird having a 35-year-old bloke standing next to her, so props to her. But it made me think. I think there is something in the human heart that gets that we need a little bit more than just freedom to be able to make our own choices. I think in the concert, the girl felt like she was part of something bigger. I think she was hearing lyrics that made her feel understood. I think she was singing along with a singer who made her feel loved and that she loved in return. And my point is, as God's people, we have something so much better to enjoy than just a good singer. We have the freedom that comes with knowing not just someone who gets us and who's kind of clever with lyrics. Because of Jesus, we have the freedom to be able to live in loving relationship with the God of the universe, with the one who made us, the God who knows us better than we know ourselves. What could be more freeing? What could be more life-giving than living with Him? I certainly feel like this is something I need to hear, something that I resonate with. Sometimes, if I'm really honest, sometimes I feel like, okay, it's great God dealt with my sins. It's great the Bible gives me a worldview that makes good sense in the world around me. But sometimes I need to stop and ask, is God more than that for me? Is He more than a worldview? Is He my God who I love? Do I know His love for me? Do I know how treasured I am? How can I stoke those emotions and remind myself of what He's like? How can I be driven to worship and passion as I remember His love for me? Well, perhaps it can start as we remember what we've heard today. If we trust in Jesus, He is the one who set us free. He's carried us on eagle's wings and saved us by His grace from sins. And with Jesus, we weren't just set free for the sake of it. We've been set free for something. We've been set free so that we get to be His people, His treasured possession, His holy kingdom of priests. And we've been set free for someone. We've been set free so that we can come and worship Him. We get to live with Him. We get to be the people He loves, and He gets to be our God. That's what was before the Israelites as they came to the mountain of God all those thousands of years ago, the chance to be His people if they live for Him and live His way. And 3,000 years later, but this is what's before us as well. True freedom is on offer, and as we trust Jesus, as we live our lives for Him today, this is the life that the Holy Spirit who is in us will help us to live. And we're going to live for Him. I'm going to pray and ask for His help, and then appropriately we're going to come and worship this God, our God. Father God, we thank You for the freedom You give us in the good news of Jesus, that as we trust in Him, we can know that our sins are left behind. And Father, we thank You that having been set free, You bring us to Yourself, that through Jesus we can be Your people, that we're Your treasured possession, Your kingdom of priests, Your holy people, that You bring us to Yourself, that we can be Yours and that You can be ours. Help us to live this way for Your sake and for the sake of Your Son. Amen.